Thank you, Bronwyn. Morning, church. Hope you're keeping well. So I always like to start with a story before I get into things. It helps me get into the flow of things and I don't fumble at the start. So last week, me and Brittany were away. We went to Auckland to spend time with her family, do some wedding stuff because there's more shopping malls and stuff up there. And then we went to the beach in Matarangi, her auntie's beach house, which is completely flash. It's something I'd never thought I'd get to stay in. But one morning, Brittany tries to convince me to go swimming, right? And I'm going to be real with you. I wanted to get up and game. I just brought myself a new laptop. My games are just installed. So I didn't want to go. And Brittany's like, nope, we're going swimming. Get your togs on. So I get up and I go swimming with Brittany. We get in the water, it's really warm, it's nice, it's lovely, and then I hear Brittany scream and push me. And I go flying this way, and there's this giant fin. I'm not even playing with you, church. There's this giant fin, and there's this shark that's longer than I am tall. And I'm playing, she didn't push me. She screamed and goes, look out, and then ran out of the water. And then I went running out with her. And then we sat there and we watched this big shark just swim back and forward, and then he left. I ain't even playing, church. And then we tell the locals, we're like, tell the locals, don't go swimming, there's a shark. And they're like, what are you talking about? They come up all the time, they eat our fish, and then he runs in and swims. And they looked at us like we were the crazy ones. It actually was. Thank you, Brittany. Thank you. So Ben asked me to speak on the story of Lazarus. This is actually one of my favorite stories in the Bible, one of, at least top five. I wouldn't say top three, but top five. That is because many years ago, I went to read this story, and I remember saying to myself, oh, not this story, I already know what happens. The guy get raised from the dead, la-di-da. And then I was convicted, and I said a prayer. I said, God, show me something in this story that I've never seen before. And he's given me this message, which I've preached at another church, but it stuck with me to this day. But before we get into that, I'm going to invite my good friend Jari up for me. This is my work colleague, Jari. This is the one when I told you guys about that young man we ministered to in Auckland. This is the one who did it with me. But Jari's going to do a favor for me. He's going to fit into this box today. I got a prize for you if you can fit your whole self in that box. You got to get in the box. Don't break the box. You got to get yourself in the box. What are you doing? You can't break the box. I need the box. What are you doing? Get out of here. Go and sit down. I can't believe you broke my box. That was my box for preaching, and you broke it. This is the message I got from the raising of Lazarus. So for the next 20 to 30 minutes, we're going to look at this story, and I'm going to show you how we put God in a box, how the people in this story put God in a box. And when God broke that box, they got upset. And we put God in a box with our own faith, in the way we see the world, the way we see Christianity, and the way we see God. We put God in a box by our expectations of him. God, you should move in this way. God, you should do this in my life. This is how I see you moving, God, which they did to Jesus in this story. Or one of the most common ones is we put God in a box because of our need of him. God, I need you to do this. God, I need you to move in this way. I need you to show up here. And in doing that, we put God in a box, which isn't inherently a wrong thing. It's not wrong to put God in a box. We put everything in a box. Literally everything we do in life, we put into a box. We frame it. We shape it. But what I'm going to show you is God loves to break that box. He loves to show you his goodness, his bigness, his amazingness, and how no matter how many times you try and fit him in a box, he's going to break out of it. But he's not going to break out of it to rebuke you and say, you're trying to fit me in a box and I'm this big God. He's going to do it to invite you into bigger faith, into bigger love, into bigger, to see how much bigger he is than you could ever imagine. So, let's start with the story. A man named Lazarus was sick. This is John 11. By the way, just for anyone who is keen on that, he lived in Bethany with his sisters, Mary and Martha. This is Mary, who later poured expensive perfume on the Lord's feet and wiped them with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was sick, So the two sisters sent a message to Jesus telling him, "Lord, your dear friend Lazarus is very sick." But when Jesus heard about this, he said, "Lazarus' sickness will not end in death. No, it happened for the glory of God, so that the Son of God will receive glory from this." So although Jesus loved Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, he stayed where he was for the next 2 days. Finally, he said to his disciples, "Let's go back to Judea." But his disciples objected. "Rabbi," they said, "only a few days ago, the people in Judea were trying to stone you. Are you going there again?" Then Jesus replies, "There are 12 hours of daylight every day. During the day, people can walk safely. They can see because they have the light of this world. But at night, there is danger of stumbling because they have no light." Then he said, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but now I'll go and wake him up." The disciples said, "Lord, if he's sleeping, he will soon get better." They thought Jesus meant Lazarus was simply sleeping, but Jesus meant Lazarus was dead. So he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and for your sake, I'm glad I wasn't there, for now you will really believe. Come, let's go see him." Thomas, nicknamed the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let's go too and die with Jesus." So that's how our story starts. That's the intro. And as we read through that, we could see the story setting up this scene where two sisters who are good friends with Jesus send word to him to come and heal their brother. And what we're going to do now is look at the three different point of views at the start of that story. So the first one is verse 3. "Lord, your dear friend Lazarus is sick." Mary and Martha are looking to Jesus to heal their brother because they know Jesus loved him. And we can tell by the way the author of this book has written the story that they knew about Jesus and had faith in him. So they had obviously seen some of the works he had done. So they call to this one they believe is the Messiah and the one who loved their brother, which Jesus himself said, Jesus loved Martha, Mary, and Lazarus. And the funny thing is, when I was reading a commentary on this, there's only four times in the Bible, I think it's four or five, that the word Jesus, that God references someone as a friend. It's Abraham, it's the disciples, and it's Lazarus. So it's quite a big title when God calls you friend. And the sisters knew that Jesus looked at Lazarus this way, so they said, "Let's call Lazarus because he'll heal our brother. He's sick, but he'll come and he'll heal him because that's the Jesus we know." So they're putting him in this box of, this is how I expect God to move. This is how we know God moves. So let's get Jesus to come here. He loves Lazarus and he'll raise him from the dead. But one of my favorite point of views in this story, and this isn't one I'd have, and this isn't one I think 90% of this church would have, or any Christian would have really, is the view of Jesus. Because Jesus seen the full picture. Jesus says, "Nah, bro, we ain't going back just yet. We're going to sit here and chill. Lazarus is sick, Jesus is friend, and Jesus is like, we're going to chill." But that's because Jesus knew that God had so much more planned through this. Jesus could see what God was doing when no one else could. And Jesus said this, "Lazarus' sickness will not end in death. No, it happened for the glory of God, so that the Son of God will receive glory from this." Jesus could see the bigger picture. He knew God wanted to break out of a whole lot of people's boxes, the sisters' boxes, probably Lazarus's box, not that he was probably too conscious of what was going on, and all the other people who were there. He was going to break all of their boxes. And as we'll see later in chapter 11, what Jesus does is going to blow everyone out of the water. And it's actually going to be the thing that leads the religious leaders to finally say, "We need to get rid of this guy. Like, we've been playing around far too long." Now, the third point of view, and there's one much more that I'd have myself, is the view of the disciples. These are the guys that are the closest to Jesus. For his 3 years of ministry, they've been with him. And you think by now they'd get it. You think by now they'd be like, "Yo, Jesus has got that look in his eyes. He's about to do something big. Let's go with him." But the disciples say, bro, what are you doing, Jesus? What are you up to? You're going back to Judea. They just tried to kill you." This gives me hope, because it shows that if those boys still didn't get it, when I didn't get it, that's okay. When I'm like, "God, what are you doing?" When I've put God in my box and I still don't get it, it's okay. Because if the 12 disciples, 12 of the most important people in the Bible. Well, 11 of these guys, I guess. But, sorry, I don't know where that came from. You know what I mean, though. But I guess the 12th was still important. Now I've lost my place. He smashed the box. And he's going to smash the box of the disciples. And I just love the fact they didn't believe, because it gives me hope. Because when I put God in my box, it shows that if he's cared for them, he's still going to care for me. That was my point. So the funny thing is, though, this is the last we hear about the disciples. In most of the stories in the Gospels, the disciples are heavily involved. After this, we don't hear about them anymore, which is just another interesting thought. Part of the story I thought was quite good. But now we're going to read a little bit more. And we're going to see what happens when Jesus actually shows up. Let me just see where I'm reading through to 29. So we're going to read from John 11, 17 to 29. So when Jesus arrived at Bethany, he was told that Lazarus had already been in his grave for 4 days. Bethany was only a few miles down the road from Jerusalem, and many of the people had come to counsel Martha and Mary in their loss. When Martha got word that Jesus was coming, she went to meet him. But Mary stayed in the house. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that God will give you what you ask." Jesus told her, "Your brother will rise again." "Yes," Martha said, "he will rise when everyone else rises at the last day." Jesus told her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live even after dying. Anyone who lives in me and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this, Martha?" "Yes, Lord," she told him, I have always believed you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one who is to come into the world from God. See, I love this because now the story's expanding. We're getting some action. Jesus is on the scene. He's now talking with the sisters. And Martha, as soon as she hears Jesus is there, she runs, right? Everyone's come to counsel her from Judea. Her brother's in the grave now. She hears Jesus is there, and she knows where she needs to be. Even in everything that's going on, her disappointment, as we'll read later, she still knows where she needs to be, and that's before Jesus. And when Martha gets there, she says, "Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died." She had placed Jesus in a box by the way she expected him to heal her brother when she needed him to. She expected Jesus to drop everything and move from wherever he was, come back to Judea and heal her brother. But Jesus is about to break that box, and a lot of us know the way the story ends. But at this time, she didn't. And I've got to be real, I can't fault Martha here for getting upset with Jesus or putting him in a box, because we've all done this. There's many times in my life where God has moved in a way or moves late to my expectations or hasn't shown up in the way I thought he was. And I've said, "God, what are you doing?" And I've been very upset with him. And my prayers have been quite heavy prayers towards him, to be honest. Or my heart is saddened and my posture towards him changed because he didn't move the way I expected him to. But what I love about Martha is she didn't take her eyes off the one she knew to have faith in. Even in her disappointment, she knew she needed to be with Jesus. And she knew who Jesus still was in her disappointment. "But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask." Yeah. And I love Jesus' response here. Because he sees that Martha is in a place of disappointment, and he sees that she knows where she needs to be. So he responds with an invitation to believe more. He responds by inviting her into bigger faith. He doesn't rebuke her for being disappointed. He doesn't rebuke her for trying to put him in a box and expecting him to act a certain way. Jesus responds by saying, "I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live. Even after dying, anyone who lives in me and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this, Martha?" He is inviting her into more faith through her disappointment. I think Jesus probably understood that she was struggling with the situation. I don't think Jesus looked at her in anger. I think Jesus would have understood that her brother is now wrapped up in cloth and sitting in a tomb, and he probably understood her upset, how upset she was, but because she still came to him, He invited her into more faith. And her response is, Lord, she told him, I have always believed in you. I have always believed you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one who has come into the world from God. What's my main point here? It's that even in her disappointment, Martha knew to keep her faith in God. And I'm going to come back to this later because it's the strum of my message. But this is what we can learn through these sisters and through mainly these sisters and Lazarus, is that in our disappointment, it's not wrong to be upset. It's not wrong to think, God, why didn't you move in this way? It's wrong when we separate ourselves from God. But like these sisters, we have to stay next to him and say, God, I don't understand, but I still believe in you. I still believe you're the Messiah. And when we see that, what did I write here? Okay, now I'm going to read John 11:30-36. Just slowly working our way through the story. So here we are. Yeah. Jesus had stayed outside the village at the place where Martha met him. When the people who were at the house counseling Mary saw her leave so hastily, they assumed she was going to Lazarus's grave to weep. So they followed her there. When Mary arrived and saw Jesus, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping and saw the other people wailing with her, a deep anger welled up within him, and he was deeply troubled. Where have you put him? He asked them. Right, a little more. They told him, Lord, come see. Jesus wept. The people who were standing nearby said, see how much he loved him. But he said, this man healed a blind man. Couldn't he have kept Lazarus from dying? So now in the story, we have the other sister come. Martha goes back to Mary, tells the Lord is calling for her, and Mary goes to see Jesus. And her response is the same as her sister's. When Mary arrived and saw Jesus, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. The funny thing about this is word for word what the sister said. And as one of the commentaries I was reading as I was researching over this said, I'll just read what they said. It says, it's plain they made this natural remark to each other, perhaps many times during these sad 4 days, and not without having their confidence in his love at times overclouded. For such trials of faith, however, are not particular to them. So it shows that these two sisters were going through the same emotions, they're going through the same things, and they've come before Jesus and said, if only you were here. But just like her sister, she knew where she needed to be. Now here we have one of the smallest verses in the Bible, but we have the smallest verse in the Bible, but also one of the most interesting and talked about in some cases. Jesus wept. Jesus wept is one of the sure I said that. Therefore, when Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who came with her weeping, he groaned in spirit and was troubled, and he said, where have you laid him? I love this because it shows the emotion and the heart of Jesus in this situation. And one of the other commentaries I talked about, they mentioned how in some of the older translations, some of the ones like New King James and things like that, they replace some of the new ones say anger and some of the older ones say groaned. But it's because that word can be translated to, it was like there was an emotion welling up in Jesus and he had to hold back tears at this point. And as the story develops, he gets to a point where that breaks out and he says, where have you laid him? So it shows just how much Jesus was involved and cared about this situation and what was going on. And here's where the big bang happens. Here's where the story comes to its last part. So now we're reading John 11:38-43. Jesus was still angry as he arrived at the tomb and a cave with a stone rolled across its entrance. Roll the stone aside, Jesus told them. But Martha, the dead man's sister, protested, Lord, he has been dead for 4 days. The smell will be terrible. Jesus responded, didn't I tell you that you would see God's glory if you believe? So they rolled the stone aside. Then Jesus looked up to heaven and said, Father, I thank you for hearing me. You always hear me, but I said it out loud for the sake of all these people standing here, so that they will believe you sent me. Then Jesus shouted, Lazarus, come out. And the dead man came out, his hand and feet bound in grave cloths, his face wrapped in a head cloth. Jesus told them, unwrap him and let him go. So Jesus arrives at the tomb and he says, Lazarus, come out. And this reminds me of what we read in John 11. Jesus knew the whole time what was going to happen. He could see what the Father was doing when no one else could. Lazarus' sickness will not end in death. No, it happened for the glory of God, so that the Son of God will receive glory from this. God knows what he's doing. Even when we can't see what he's doing, God knows what he's doing. When we've put God in a box, when we've put the Holy Spirit in a box, when we've put Jesus in a box, and we are upset and can't understand what God's doing, God knows what he's doing. And as long as we hold on to him like the sisters did, God will break that box and he will invite us into bigger faith. Jesus knows what he's doing then, and he knows what he's doing now in your life. This is the main point of the story, is that when we put God in a box, he's not going to try and rebuke you. He's not going to try and break your box to show you how big he is and to be like, haha, this is how big I am. But it's to show you that there is more of him that you could ever expect. There's more love in him. There's more understanding. There's more kindness. Even when he doesn't move the way you think he should, he moves in a way that he knows he should. And as long as your response to him is, yes, Lord, I believe, in your times of trouble, you will see him move in big ways. And it's funny because Jesus said this was going to bring glory to the Son. And this is actually one of the miracles that had the whole world then turn and look at Jesus. And some scholars believe that when Jesus said this will bring glory to the Son of Man, it wasn't talking about the rising of Lazarus. It was actually talking about his crucifixion. But because of the rising of Lazarus, they decided to kill Lazarus and Jesus. The religious leaders confirmed it and said, we are doing this because it needs to happen for the people that one man die. So this story didn't only just speak of the rising of Lazarus and the box he was going to break there. God was going to break the whole story, the box of the whole story, and Jesus was going to get crucified, bring glory, and then we have this, what we have today. And he did that by breaking people's boxes. And I think, to finish, I'll share a story with you guys on a time God broke one of my own boxes. And it was one of those real aha moments for me, and I'd never seen it this way before. But I remember 13 years ago, I came to my faith. And a lot of you guys know the story. I'm not going to share it again. But I came in here, gave my life to God, and then he started to work in my heart. And I'll never forget one day I was reading my Bible in my room, and God said to me, I need you to go and see your father, because this is what I want for you. So I did a whole walk. I didn't have my license at the time. I was freshly saved. And I missioned myself over town to my dad's house. And I hadn't seen him for years. And we had a conversation. I remember it's the first time I ever said to him, where were you in my life? And it actually went pretty well. And I left that. I knew I needed healing. And I walked with some people for years. And then every now and then I'd get a text from my dad asking me to give him some money or get some groceries for him because he had to spend his money on some other stuff. And I'd always sit there and see these texts and get upset and be like, man, I should be asking you for money. You're my dad. But here you are asking me for money. And I'd say to myself, but I know that the fifth commandment, I think it's the fifth commandment, says that I should honor my mother and father. So God, I'm going to do this for you. And it was from that journey, I kept doing that. And then as a lot of you guys know, I think it was last year, my father was diagnosed with cancer and he was given 8 months to live. And in that time, me and my siblings tried to do more restoration and more healing in that relationship. But obviously because of the news and everything, a lot of other feelings welled up on me that I had forgotten were there. And I did find it hard to see my father. And every time I'd go to see him, I'd remind myself of that verse. And I'd say, God, I do this for you. You have commanded me to honor my mother and father. So I'm going to show up and I'm going to be there for my dad because that's what you've commanded me to do. And then I'd go and do it. And I'd have an amazing time with my dad. Healing would happen and we'd have good chats. And I'd ask him stories about when I was young and things like that. And it was good, right? And then last year, my dad passed. It was super sad. All me and my siblings got quite upset. And it was like a three-day period where you guys know how it works and you're sorting everything out. And after that 3 days, everything was sorted out. I actually had the ashes. A lot of my sisters had gone home, who had traveled down here to spend those last moments with his body. And I get home after the third day and I'm tired. I've got the week off work and I just lay on my bed. Everything's finished, if you would. And God says to me, "You never did that for me. You were doing it for you." And that verse dropped in my head. And God broke my box. Because in that moment, I understand that his commandments weren't for me to honor him. Yes, it is. But I honor him, and in that, I receive goodness. If I hadn't have shown up to see my father, if I hadn't had changed my heart posture, I probably would have been in a worse place when he passed than if I had tried to honor God. But God blew my box that night because I sat there and I realized, by obeying your commands, I'm not benefiting you. Here I am going, "God, I'm doing this for you." How arrogant. "I'm doing this for God." God's like, "No, I was doing it for you. Because you honored my word, you had healing in your life." And I just remember sitting there and it completely blew my mind away that everything in God's word, if I look at it through that mind frame, is for my benefit. And when I honor him, I'm actually just benefiting myself. And to you, to most of you, it's probably such a simple thing. But it just blew my box away. And I was like, man, every time now when I go to honor God, I have to remember I'm doing this in honor of him. But in some way, he's doing it because it's right for my life. And God blew my box. And it's just changed my heart posture towards him in that way. Which we can see later happens with the sisters when they're anointing Jesus' feet before his burial. And Lazarus, their brother, is now walking around again. But just like his sisters, church, I encourage you that in your moments of disappointment, in your moments of doubt, in your moments of struggle, when you're finding that God isn't working the way you think he should, when your faith doesn't match up what God's doing, or when your expectations of him don't match what he's doing, don't look away from who he is. Remind yourself who he is, like the sisters did. "Jesus, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. But I know that you're the Messiah and that God will give you whatever you ask." And next minute, their brother's walking out of a tomb. And I just think that's a great story. So what I'm going to do now is something that I don't normally do, because I normally just finish and then I go and sit down and do jokes with my friend. But I'm going to ask Scotty to play some music, just whatever he thinks is good. And I'm just going to open this space for anyone who feels that I've placed God in a box. It doesn't have to be today. It doesn't have to be an expectation or anything like that. Just any area where you know that God has been placed in a box in your life, I just want you to come up the front and then open your heart to him and just to say, "God, I want you to be who you are in this space where I've confined you."